It was when curiosity about Gatsby was at its highest that the lights in his house failed to go on one Saturday night. Wondering if he were sick, I went over to find out. An unfamiliar butler with a villainous face squinted at me suspiciously from the door. "Is Mr. Gatsby sick?"
"Nope."
After a pause, he added, "Sir," in a dilatory, grudging way. I haven't seen him around, and I was rather worried. "Tell him Mr. Carraway came over."
"Carraway. All right, I'll tell him."
Abruptly, he slammed the door. My Finn informed me that Gatsby had dismissed every servant in his house a week ago and replaced them with a half a dozen others. Next day, Gatsby called me on the phone.
"Going away?" I inquired.
"No, old sport."
"I hear you fired all your servants."
"I wanted somebody who wouldn't gossip. Daisy comes over quite often, in the afternoons."
So the whole caravansary had fallen in like a card house at the disapproval in her eyes.
"There's some people Wolfsheim wanted to do something for. They're all brothers and sisters. They used to run a small hotel."
"I see." He was calling up at Daisy's request. "Would I come to lunch at her house tomorrow?"
"Miss Baker would be there."
Half an hour later, Daisy herself telephoned and seemed relieved to find that I was coming. Something was up. The next day was broiling. In my train, the straw seats of the car hovered on the edge of combustion. Through the hall of the Buchanan's house blew a faint wind, carrying the sound of the telephone bell out to Gatsby and me as we waited at the door. The butler set down the receiver and came toward us, glistening slightly, to take our stiff straw hats. "Madame expects you in the salon." The room, shadowed well with awnings, was dark and cool. Daisy and Jordan lay upon an enormous couch, like silver idols weighing down their own white dresses against the singing breeze of the fans. "We can't move," they said together. Jordan's fingers, powdered white over their tan, rested for a moment in mind.
"And Mr. Thomas Buchanan, the athlete?" I inquired.
Simultaneously, I heard his voice, gruff, muffled, husky, at the hall telephone. Gatsby stood in the center of the crimson carpet and gazed around with fascinated eyes. Daisy watched him and laughed her sweet, exciting laugh. The voice in the hall rose high with annoyance.
"Very well, then. I won't sell you the car at all. I'm under no obligations to you."
Tom flung open the door and hurried in.
"Mr. Gatsby."
He put out his broad, flat hand with well-concealed dislike.
"I'm glad to see you, sir."
"Nick."
"Make us a cold drink," cried Daisy.
As he left the room again, she got up and went over to Gatsby and pulled his face down, kissing him on the mouth. She sat down on the couch just as Tom came back, preceding four gin rickeys that clicked full of ice. Gatsby took up his drink.
"They certainly look cool," he said.
We drank in long, greedy swallows.
"Come outside," suggested Tom. "I'd like you to have a look at the place."
I went with them out to the veranda. On the green sand, stagnant in the heat, one small sail crawled slowly toward the fresher sea. Gatsby's eyes followed it momentarily. He raised his hand and pointed across the bay.
"I'm right across from you."
"So you are."
Our eyes lifted over the rose beds and the hot lawn. Slowly the white wings of the boat moved against the blue, cool limit of the sky.
"There's sport for you," said Tom, nodding. "I'd like to be out there with him for about an hour."
We had luncheon in the dining room, darkened too against the heat, and drank down nervous gaiety with the cold ale.
"What'll we do with ourselves this afternoon?" cried Daisy. "And the day after that, and the next 30 years.
"Don't be morbid," said Jordan. "Life starts all over again when it gets crisp in the fall."
"But it's so hot. Let's all go to town."
Gatsby's eyes floated toward her.
"Oh," she cried, "you look so cool."
Their eyes met, and they stared together at each other, alone in space. With an effort, she glanced down at the table.
"You always look so cool."
She had told him that she loved him, and Tom Buchanan saw. He was astounded. His mouth opened a little, and he looked at Gatsby, and then back at Daisy, as if he had just recognized her as someone he knew a long time ago.
All right, said Tom. I'm perfectly willing to go to town.
Come on. We're all going to town.
His voice got us to our feet and out onto the blazing gravel drive.
Shall we all go in my car? Suggested Gatsby.
He felt the hot green leather of the seat.
I ought to have left it in the shade.
Is it standard shift? Demanded Tom.
Yes.
Well, you take my coupe and let me drive your car to town. Come on, Daisy.
Tom pressed her with his hand toward Gatsby's car.
I'll take you in this circus wagon.
He opened the door, but she moved out from the circle of his arm. You take Nick and Jordan. We'll follow you in the coupe.
She walked close to Gatsby, touching his coat with her hand. Jordan and Tom and I got into the front seat of Gatsby's car. Tom pushed the unfamiliar gears tentatively, and we shot off into the oppressive heat, leaving them out of sight behind.
Did you see that? Demanded Tom.
See what?
He looked at me keenly, realizing that Jordan and I must have known all along.
You think I'm pretty dumb, don't you?
We drove for a while in silence. Then Dr. T.J. Eckelberg's faded eyes came into sight down the road.
Tom threw on both brakes, and we slid to an abrupt, dusty stop under Wilson's sign.
After a moment, the proprietor emerged from the interior of his establishment and gazed hollow-eyed at the car.
"Let's have some gas," cried Tom. "What do you think we stop for? To admire the view?"
"I'm sick," said Wilson. "Been sick all day." With an effort, he unscrewed the cap of the tank. In the sunlight, his face was green.
"I need money pretty bad. I was wondering what you were going to do with your old car."
"How'd you like this one?" inquired Tom. "I bought it last week."
"It's a nice yellow one," said Wilson as he strained at the handle.
"Like to buy it?"
"Big chance." "No, but I could make some money on the other."
"What do you want money for all of a sudden?"
"My wife and I want to go west."
"Your wife does?" exclaimed Tom.
"She's been talking about it for 10 years.
He rested for a moment against the pump, shading his eyes.
"And now she's going whether she wants to or not. I'm going to get her away."
The coupe flashed by us with a flurry of dust and the flash of a waving hand.
"I just got wised up to something funny the last 2 days, remarked Wilson. "That's why I want to get away."
Over the ash heaps, the giant eyes of Dr. T.J. Eckelberg kept their vigil. But I perceived, after a moment, that other eyes were regarding us with peculiar intensity from less than 20 feet away. In one of the windows over the garage, the curtains had been moved aside a little, and Myrtle Wilson was peering down at the car. Her eyes, wide with jealous terror, were fixed not on Tom, but on Jordan Baker, whom she took to be his wife.
There is no confusion like the confusion of a simple mind, and as we drove away, Tom was feeling the hot whips of panic. His wife and his mistress, until an hour ago secure and inviolate, were slipping from his control. Instinct made him step on the accelerator with the double purpose of overtaking Daisy and leaving Wilson behind, and we sped along until, among the spidery girders of the elevated, we came in sight of the easygoing blue coupe. It came to a stop, and Daisy signaled us to draw up alongside.
"Where are we going?" she cried.
"Follow me," said Tom.
We engaged the parlor of a suite in the Plaza Hotel. The room was large and stifling. Daisy went to the mirror and stood with her back to us, fixing her hair.
"It's a swell suite," whispered Jordan respectfully, and everyone laughed.
Tom unrolled a bottle of whiskey from a towel and put it on the table.
"Call up and order some ice," said Daisy.
As Tom took up the receiver, the compressed heat exploded into sound, and we were listening to the portentous chords of Mendelssohn's Wedding March from the ballroom below. Gatsby's foot beat a short, restless tattoo, and Tom eyed him suddenly. "By the way, Mr. Gatsby, I understand you're an Oxford man."
"Yes, I went there."
A waiter knocked and came in with crushed mint and ice, but the silence was unbroken by his thank you and the soft closing of the door. This tremendous detail was to be cleared up at last.
"I'd like to know when," said Tom.
"It was 1919. I only stayed 5 months."
Tom glanced around to see if we mirrored his unbelief. But we were all looking at Gatsby.
"It was an opportunity they gave to some of the officers after the armistice. We could go to any of the universities in England or France."
I wanted to get up and slap him on the back. I had one of those renewals of complete faith in him that I'd experienced before.
Daisy rose, smiling faintly, and went to the table.
"Open the whiskey, Tom, and I'll make you a mint julep. Then you won't seem so stupid to yourself." "Wait a minute. I want to ask Mr. Gatsby one more question."
"Go on," said Gatsby.
"What kind of a row are you trying to cause in my house anyhow?"
They were out in the open at last, and Gatsby was content.
"He isn't causing a row."
Daisy looked desperately from one to the other.
"You're causing a row. Please, have a little self-control."
"Self-control," repeated Tom.
"I suppose the latest thing is to sit back and let Mr. Nobody from nowhere make love to your wife. Well, if that's the idea, you can count me out. Nowadays, people begin by sneering at family life and family institutions, and next, they'll throw everything overboard and have intermarriage between black and white."
Flushed with his impassioned gibberish, he saw himself standing alone on the last barrier of civilization.
"I know I'm not very popular. I don't give big parties. I suppose you've got to make your house into a pigsty in order to have any friends in the modern world."
Angry as I was, as we all were, I was tempted to laugh whenever he opened his mouth. The transition from libertine to prig was so complete.
"I've got something to tell you, old sport," began Gatsby,
but Daisy guessed at his intention.
"Please don't. Please, let's all go home. Why don't we all go home?"
I got up.
"That's a good idea.
Come on, Tom. Nobody wants a drink."
"I want to know what Mr. Gatsby has to tell me."
"Your wife doesn't love you," said Gatsby.
"She's never loved you. She loves me."
"You must be crazy."
Gatsby sprang to his feet, vivid with excitement.
"She never loved you, do you hear? She only married you because I was poor and she was tired of waiting for me. It was a terrible mistake, but in her heart, she never loved anyone except me."
At this point, Jordan and I tried to go, but Tom and Gatsby insisted with competitive firmness that we remain, as though neither of them had anything to conceal and it would be a privilege to partake vicariously of their emotions.
"Sit down, Daisy.
What's been going on? I want to hear all about it."